According to the American Heart Association, nearly half of all adults in the U.S. have some kind of cardiovascular disease. And heart disease is responsible for close to 1 in 4 American deaths this year. It is the leading cause of deaths in the U.S. and around the world. But that rate has been in steady decline for decades because of developments in drugs, medical procedures, and everyday lifestyle recommendations. For more, we're joined by Sandeep Jahar. He is the director of the Heart Failure Program at Long Island Jewish Medical Center and the author of the book, Heart, A History. Dr. Jahar, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you.
So heart disease is still the leading cause of death in the U.S., but not as much as it was a few decades ago. Why is that?
Well, yes, I mean, you rightly point out that a few decades ago, heart disease was actually much more prevalent. Actually, in the 1940s and 50s, before the government got involved in heart research, nearly 1 out of 2 Americans were dying of cardiovascular disease. So things have improved, and for a lot of reasons. I mean, there are drugs that have come about, like cholesterol-lowering drugs. There are procedures like angioplasty, bypass surgery, a lot of technology. And then there have been societal changes, like decreases in smoking and encouraging exercise and sort of knowledge of risk factors. So there are a number of things. But, you know, in recent decade or so, the rate of decline of cardiovascular mortality has slowed significantly.
Well, do you think, and as you listed all of those off, I noticed that the first thing that you said was drugs. Do you think that it's more about the treatment that has brought the deaths from heart disease down, or is it more about lifestyle changes like exercise and reduction in smoking?
I think it's multifactorial. You know, one of the first results out of the landmark Framingham trial was that smoking increased risk for heart disease. And so there was a concerted effort, you know, at a national level to cut down on smoking. And that's largely been successful, although in recent years, the rate of decline of smoking has significantly slowed. So I think lifestyle factors have played a role. I think there's still a lot more to be done on the lifestyle front. And that's one of the things I talk about, you know, in my book, is how stress management increasingly, you know, will need to be front and center in how we think about heart problems.
And how should people work to deal with that, with this stress side of it?
Well, it's interesting. You know, the heart was always thought to contain the emotions, but it was always thought to be sort of a metaphorical link. But now we know that the actual biological heart, the pump, is strongly sensitive to emotional outbreak, disruption, stress. So, I mean, there are a number of things that we can do. The first thing is to recognize that it's a problem. You know, we have now more data in the last, you know, few decades to show that stress is incredibly detrimental to heart function. We know, for example, that the heart can acutely weaken in response to acute grief, like after a romantic breakup, the so-called broken heart syndrome. Mm-hmm. So how we cope with it is probably individual. It has to do with, you know, our own individual proclivities of what works for us. But on a society, you know, wide level, I think we need to have more, you know, understanding of the role that stress plays in our lives.
Let's talk about treatments. What are the main treatments at this point for heart disease in this country, and how are they changing?
Well, there are sort of two main categories. I mean, one is, you know, lifestyle factors. So, you know, encouraging patients not to smoke, to, you know, eat right. The other category is medications. So we have, over the last 50 or so years, developed incredibly powerful medications like statins, for example, which lower cholesterol, and beta blockers, ACE inhibitors, and so on. So drugs, you know, undoubtedly play a strong role in treating heart disease. And then there are procedures. Many people don't realize that, you know, in the last maybe 60 or 70 years, we've developed most of the procedures that we really take for granted in helping us treat heart disease. Coronary angioplasty, like stents, for example, coronary bypass surgery, pacemakers, defibrillators, heart transplants. All those things were developed mostly in America after World War II. So there's been a huge technological, you know, progress.
Well, and if somebody has to get, and so many Americans do at this point, have to get valve procedures done or angioplasty, stents put in, even bigger procedures. Are they risky? Are they like, should people be as scared as they often are to have to get something like that done at this point? Or have doctors gotten so good at them that they're not as risky as they were?
Yeah. I mean, what's riskier is having the disease. The treatments often are much less risky for a patient. So, you know, for example, when heart attacks were relatively untreated in the 1950s, the mortality from an acute heart attack in the hospital was about 30%. Now it's about 3% with angioplasty and so on. There's a tenfold decrease. So there's been, you know, huge improvements. Any procedure, any surgery poses some risks, but I think those risks are decreasing, especially now as we develop relatively non-invasive ways of, you know, fixing our hearts. So, for example, you mentioned valves. It used to be that we'd have to cut open the chest, cut open the heart, cut out the diseased valve, put in a new valve, sew it in, and then sew up the heart, and then close the chest. That was a huge procedure that took several hours and usually involved weeks of rehabilitation. Today, we can put in a valve, a new valve in a patient through a sort of stent procedure, a catheter that goes in through the groin and is pushed up to the heart, and the valve can be inserted that way. No surgery involved, not cutting open the chest, and the procedure has actually been shown to be superior to conventional surgery, and the patients have rehab times that are a couple of days rather than several weeks. So we're making amazing progress, but still a lot more needs to be done.
I want to ask you about one more treatment, if you will, but it probably doesn't belong in the same category as stents and drugs and a healthy lifestyle. But there's been a couple of recent studies that have linked dog ownership to better chances of surviving if you have heart disease or have had a heart attack. What do you think about that?
I love dogs.
So do I.
We just got a, you know, we got a dog a year ago, and it's transformed all of our lives. It seems that dog ownership provides several health benefits. I mean, you know, one thing is that, you know, you have to walk your dog, and so the exercise from that. But I think, you know, on a deeper level, dogs provide companionship and combat loneliness, and we know that these things are tremendously detrimental to health. So I think that the love that we get from pets alleviates stress, and we know stress is bad. So I would say, you know, when you asked me earlier, well, what do we do about the stress? Well, we don't have a pill like we do for cholesterol. So reducing emotional stress is much more difficult. And that may be the reason why the American Heart Association doesn't recognize emotional stress as a risk factor for heart disease, because we don't know what to do with it. But I would say that figure out what's right for you: yoga, physical exercise, meditation, and yes, you know, pet ownership. People I know who own pets, especially dogs, tend to be happier.
You've had heart issues yourself.
Yes.
And what have you done to get your lifestyle in a way that you feel you're reducing risk of any issues in the future?
Well, I got a dog. I wrote my book in part because I had a very malignant family history of heart disease, and I wanted to explore the heart, you know, a little more deeply, both as a metaphorical organ and as a biological organ. But when I learned that I have heart disease, I sort of looked at my life and I looked at what I wasn't doing right. And I was doing a lot of things right already. I was, you know, eating pretty well. I was exercising. I was already taking a cholesterol-lowering medication. But for me, it was really on the emotional front. I mean, I was like running on a treadmill, constantly forcing. You know, I was very ambitious about my work. And I realized I had to slow down a little bit. What's been most effective is focusing on this sort of stress management front. You know, spending more time with my children, trying not to get so stressed out about things that happen at work, for example. You know, having a puppy, you know, these mm-hmm. things just make me happy. And so people need to figure out what's right for them. What's right for me or for someone else may not be right for you. So,
well, do you think that there's something about the American system that leads so many people to have heart issues, that we're just such a work-oriented culture that everybody's working. It's some people two jobs to make ends meet.
I think there's truth to that. You know, I spent some time in Europe recently, you know, on my book tour, and it's amazing. You know, in the evenings, people gather, you know, in the town square and have, you know, beer together with people they know from the town. I mean, there isn't that kind of conviviality in, at least in the places I've lived in the U.S. You know, and then there are other things. You know, obviously, we have a pretty sedentary lifestyle. We tend to be more overweight than we should be. And yes, we are very driven as a society to consume and achieve more and more. So I think all these things, you know, play a role.
That is Dr. Sandeep Jahar, who is the director of the Heart Failure Program at Long Island Jewish Medical Center and author of the book Heart, A History. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.